Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Kia ora, Jennifer. Jennifer Curtin, are you there?
I am.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. It's nice to chat to you this morning. There's so much happening in Aotearoa at the moment that's kind of been a little bit explosive in the last week or so to sort of talk about, I guess. Should we start with talking a little bit about the state care inquiry? Because this has been quite a big thing that we haven't touched on much on breakfast yet. What is this inquiry basically about?
So New Zealand, like many colonised countries, has a long history of their ideas of assimilation, so taking children off parents that they don't approve of and putting them into state care. It's kind of a very Victorian way of thinking about protecting children in some people's view. And so while in state care there's been a lot of claims of abusiveness towards children. Initially when this Royal Commission was set up, it was just going to be state-based care institutions that were going to be investigated.
Right.
It's been expanded to include faith-based institutions now after a lot of protest that some of the church institutions wouldn't be included.
Mm.
And we know that it's really important to consider both, particularly since faith-based institutions were an important part of that process during colonisation and mm-hmm. afterwards. So it's been a long time coming, you'd have to say. The other dimension to it is how our Indigenous people are treated and included in this, because we know, like with the Australian case,
mm-hmm.
that their Aboriginal children were almost like the target in a lot of cases of being removed from their parents and put into state care as part of a process of assimilation. And so that's another dimension that is being perhaps not explicitly addressed in this inquiry, but is certainly a really important part of it.
And it's also certainly something that's made the headlines in its own right this week with the Oranga Tamariki newsroom story, which broke this week, showing a video of Oranga Tamariki uplifting a child or attempting to uplift a child from a young Māori mother. And these things are kind of connected in a very sort of intense way, because I guess if you uplift children, you move them into the state care system, and then it kind of becomes part of this whole process. What, as somebody who's sort of, I guess, aware of the kind of way that these things are linked, it's part of what you study and research and things like that, how do we sort of make these processes, I guess, less traumatic, less awful for the families involved and for Indigenous populations, especially in New Zealand, with our Māori population, 3 Māori babies a week being uplifted by Oranga Tamariki. That's a lot of children.
Yeah, and we know that there's been a significant increase. So Newsroom have covered this most recent incident, but they've been doing a much bigger series of stories, and I would really recommend your listeners to go check out their website, because there's an ongoing investigation.
Mm.
Because the inquiry into state care has a cut-off period of 1999, so it's an historical mm-hmm. investigation, and they're not going to extend those parameters forward, despite calls from some key Māori scholars that they need to kind of include contemporary, current, and potential future practices in this regard. But I think that even though they are connected, and that's really important, but they still, the Royal Commission has to go ahead and keep doing its investigations, because I truly believe if we are going to change contemporary practice, we also have to
mm-hmm.
investigate and own our historical practices and the institutional legacies that have been built bureaucratically, politically, and everything else off those. I think the other thing we have to recognise is that Oranga Tamariki was set up as a revision of the old SIF system,
mm-hmm.
and that happened. There's a really interesting piece by an academic from social work at the University of Auckland on Newsroom about this, about how you know, the sort of guiding principles that underpinned the way in which Oranga Tamariki in its other form, pre-current government form, was utilising the uplifting process to try and reduce what they said were rates of child abuse, but also costs to the state of using different family-based practices instead of uplifting, right? So then there's this interim period, I suppose, that will need investigation because really there are different ways in which the state can be operating in full partnership with iwi and with hapu and with Māori and with whānau that that take a lot more resource and a lot more care. And, you know, sometimes the state is so determined to get quick solution outcomes so they can tick boxes and save money that they're not prepared to wholly invest in new strategies. But the new strategies are really important if we're not going to end up with another Royal Commission into abuse in state care in 20 years' time, right?
Yeah, totally. Another thing that's kind of been, I guess, a criticism that people have had of this inquiry is that the process of the inquiry hasn't been very good necessarily, and that there was this confusion around the pre-interviews, which, can you explain this? Because I'm quite confused by that as well. What is a pre-interview?
Well, and, you know, I looked at the timeline on the ministry's website of how this Royal Commission would unfold. So they were pretty clear it was going to take a long time, and there's been some criticism of that. But they put their timeline up, and then they said in mid-year the hearings would begin. Mm. Now, these hearings are done in private. These are survivors of trauma. They need support in that process. They are record, you know, the official hearings are in private are recorded, and then those people might be asked. They sort of inform then the key themes for the public hearings, and those people are asked to come back if they wish to present at the public hearings. But what we've now found out is that 40 people were asked to come and give mock submissions. So they told their story of trauma, but this is not going to count as evidence because it's like a practice run. Now, I have to say, I don't know. They said they've gone through the standard ethical, requirements, and this is, you know, they've looked at previous inquiries, but clearly some of the survivors are feeling that this was not appropriate and that they weren't aware. That their stories would have to be told again if they were going to go on record.
Yeah.
And this is really, like, if I don't know about these practices, so I'm not able to say whether or not this was an appropriate way to, but it does sound that it's really, you know, these people who've come through this, who are willingly offering their testimony, to have to go and relive it all a second time just to go on the record.
Absolutely.
Is really... really worrying, I think.
It is also it seems quite strange, I guess, from an outside just looking at that as a process as well. It seems really strange that you would have 40 as a large number of mock interviews. It's sort of, I guess, a really basic question is just why? Why would they need to do that? Why wouldn't they just start doing the interview process? I guess there's a few kind of layers going on there, as well as the obvious and the main one being why should people have to relive that trauma unnecessarily? Yeah. You know, why can't they just do it the first time? I guess those are things I think jump to mind for me when I hear about that as well. It seems very, a lack of care in that sense as well.
Well, I suppose, you know, I suppose what a pilot, like if we just strip out the kind of the fact that this is a very sensitive kind of inquiry, and if we would, then perhaps, you know, it's not uncommon to run mock panels or other kinds of things to make sure that the questions, like in a form of a pilot study, if you like, to check that the questions and the arrangements and the way in which this is going to work has been designed in the best way possible to support people or to engage with the people's stories and get the evidence that's required.
Right.
But I would have to say 40 does sound like
a lot of people.
A lot. And And I suppose the only concern is, given that people are coming out of this and saying, I didn't realise, then one does have to wonder about whether or not the consent process and the participation for informants, the criteria, was sufficiently well explained to those participating, like, and giving them the option of opting out of a mock. It does... You know, I wouldn't want to be, you know, I can't possibly know what was said, but the standard procedure, the ethical procedure, is to make sure that your participants
are fully aware.
And that they understand what they're consenting to in all those dimensions. Not, there's a form, sure, but have they explained the form and the implications of giving evidence in this kind of way?
Well, I'm sure we'll have plenty more opportunities to talk about this in depth, because I think it's going to be a long conversation for a while. Well, it should be a long conversation
Can I just add one thing? Like, I think it's really important for the civil society dimension to this, to keep, and for Newsroom to keep these kinds of stories going.
Yeah.
Because in the Australian case, it took, you know, from the publication of a magazine article calling it the Stolen Generations to the report coming in, to John Howard refusing as Prime Minister to give an apology to Kevin Rudd giving a national apology to those generations. That took close to 30 years of activism and focus and scrutiny. So people really need to be alert to this process and continue to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, and to keep listening to survivors, you know, testimonies as well. You know, there are a lot of people who've written about this in the last week, but also there is a lot more than in the last week that you can find as well. And I think it's important to watch those videos and read those stories and stuff as well, just to sort of stay, I guess, understand what's actually happening in this country.
Well, and it's part of our history.
It is.
As non-Māori and as non-survivors, because those of us who've had a privileged life need to kind of know about this stuff, right, and own it.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, that might be all we've got time for today, Jennifer, but it's great, because it's a really important topic that we do need to keep talking about. So thank you so much for chatting to us this morning.
No worries.
We'll speak to you soon.
Yep.
Cheers.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.